science the annotation in accordance with these policies. I don't know if members have checked that, but if you go to the department's website, there will be an item of briefing patterns. You click on that, you will then get a page which has a tab for each state attorney office, and it will give you for that month which advocates got briefs, what was the nature of the brief, which state attorney allocated to them, and the aim of that is to try and ensure transparency. The one only thing that we don't provide there is the cost of the brief, and that is because there's still not great happiness from the advocates, advocates profession relating to us giving those figures. My own view is it's public funds, it should be released, but we've still got to resolve that with the advocate structures. The department is also at an advanced stage in researching the sustainability of the establishment of a framework contract with the assistance of National Treasury. There's a process on the transformation of state legal services. As you may know, the minister appointed the CEO of Legal Aid South Africa, Bidu Vedulanka, to develop a business case relating to state legal services to ensure that they're efficient, effective, and economical, as well as produce quality legal outcomes. The business case provides an analysis of the current context of state legal services and its challenges, which informs the desired outcomes to be achieved from a transformed service. It also considers the financial as well as, the finances as well as the financial model suited to the operation of a transformed legal service. An implementation plan to transition from the current to the proposed transformed state legal service, as well as a state legal services bill, has been developed. It's envisaged that we will conclude it within this fourth quarter, whereafter it will be submitted to Cabinet for in-principle approval to initiate the formal consultation process. And basically what's being proposed is the merging of the state attorney offices and the state law advisor offices. With regard to gender-based and sexual violence matters, it's something high on our agenda. We continued with the rollout of sexual offences courts, and an additional 17 courtrooms were adapted in line with the sexual offences model, bringing the total number of courtrooms adapted to 75. The improved conviction rate in sexual offences of 72.7% is an all-time high, reflecting a firm commitment to deliver justice for the most vulnerable members of society, the victims of sexual offences and gender-based violence. The sexual offences unit, SOCA unit within the NPA, established 55 operational Tutuzela care centres in support of the victims of crime. Funds have been allocated from the CARA fund, that's the criminal assets recovery account, for the rollout of a further 5 TCCs over the next 3 years. And the courts linked to TCCs have had a conviction rate of 74.5%, that's 1,899 cases. We had a national forum on the implementation of the Sexual Offences Act at the end of October last year to involve government, civil society, the different government departments and civil society in the operation of the Sexual Offences Act. There was also representation from the judiciary with regard to regional court magistrates. We've then established a steering committee to continue the work. We also are in the process of finalizing draft regulations on sexual offences courts, which has been part of an extensive consultation process since September 2015, and that's related to giving effect to Section 55A of the Judicial Matters Act, which spoke about an exclusive role for sexual offences courts. There was a workshop conducted in July of role players, again civil society, court services, regional court magistrates, to go through those regulations. But the idea is once those regulations are finalized, there will be a minimum set of standards that can be expected from a sexual offences court. And they then, I think, have to be submitted to the by the Minister to the Chief Justice for his comments. It's envisaged to finalise the draft regulations during the first quarter of next year. With regard to child justice, 75% of preliminary inquiries for children were finalised within 90 days against a target of 55%. Just to say that the Child Justice Amendment Bill was tabled last week in Parliament. We are hoping that the committee can finalise the bill. It's not too complicated. It basically provides that the age of criminal capacity be moved from 10 to 12 years, and from 12 to 14, the presumption that the child does not have criminal capacity has to be proved by the state. But there's a provision that a judicial officer can send a child on a diversion program, that they don't have to accept to satisfy themselves that the child has criminal capacity. They just have to be satisfied that the child will benefit from the diversion program. Rationalization of magisterial districts is continuing and nearly completed. The Northern Cape was finalized recently in May. In May, it was completed in May. The Free State will be before the end of the year. Before the end of the year. And that then leaves the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal and Western Cape, and the aim is to finalize them by the 31st of March 2019. The process is to ensure that there's one magistrate's court in every municipal area, district or local municipality. Then with regard to court performance, and just to, before I get into this, just to raise, there are some issues with the Chief Justice as to who's responsible for what. I think the judiciary feel they are responsible for court performance. However, a lot of the problems relating to court performance are matters outside of the control or the hands of the judiciary, things such as things relating to other departments, the police, correctional services, or within the administration of justice itself, court clerks, attendants, equipment working, interpreters, mediators, intermediaries rather, etc. But basically, the conviction rates are looking still good. The numbers either are showing a from the annual report an increase in the cases that have a verdict, or only a slight decrease. But just to say, also the regional court presidents and the chief magistrates meet quarterly, and both the DG and I attend, and the DDG Court Services in particular, but also other officials. Are invited to all, each of those meetings, and generally have had a pretty high attendance rate. It's probably near 100%. I wanted just to deal with the issue of there was some coverage on Carte Blanche on Sunday relating to two persons who had been in custody for a long time, for 2 years, and then were released. I'm not sure if they were acquitted. And the issue of remand detainees and the amount of, well, overcrowding of remand detainees is a problem. It's also a problem relating to the length of time a matter takes to be finalized. The Chief Justice issued norms and standards, which were that cases on the roll for longer than 6 months in the district court and 9 months from enrollment in the regional court become backlog cases. The Chief Justice has in his norms and standards for all courts indicated that in terms of criminal matters, accused must plead before 3 months after enrollment and the matter must be finalized within 6 months. Once the case becomes a backlog case, the matter will be given preferential treatment and should be prioritized before any new matter. The NPA is also pushing for pre-trial hearings in the lower courts to ensure all issues, including investigations, are finalised as soon as possible, and the cases when enrolled for trial are ready to be adjudicated. There are, however, a number of problems, and particularly in the regional courts, statistics are available of where the causes of the delays are. They vary from province to province. It would be problems with, but often usually problems with the key role players, prosecutors, legal aid, court services themselves, private lawyers, etc. Then, just regarding going back to the magistracy in terms of transformation of the magistracy, we've made significant inroads in terms of appointing magistrates that broadly reflect the demographics of our country. If we compare the race and gender breakdown of the magistracy in 1998 with the position at the end of February this year, then there's been an increase of 163% of black magistrates and a 249% increase of women in our magistracy. The number of African women magistrates has increased from 62 in 1998 to 472 in 2018. That's an increase of 661%. Just regarding legislations that have been passed and their implementation, the Protected Disclosure Act was assented to in August last year. There were regulations that needed to be published to provide for where a whistleblower must complain to, and those were published, I think it was on the 14th of September this year. Other legislation passed is in effect courts of law, international arbitration, and the Justice Administered Fund Act. Then we're still busy with the process of a bill for the restructuring of the lower courts. There was a draft framework developed towards the end of 2016 that formed the basis of the current process that is underway for the redrafting of the Magistrates Act of 1993 and the Magistrates Court Act of 1994. Towards the end of January last year, I held a consultative meeting with the Regional Court Presidents Forum, the Chief Magistrates Forum, as well as representatives from the two magistrates' organizations, Adamsa and Joasa, to seek their inputs on the framework. The department then commenced with the drafting of two lower courts bills, and there was a follow-up meeting on the 9th of April. It was decided that the magistracy should be afforded a further opportunity to provide written comments, and they should designate magistrates from their midst to form part of the specialist task team to assist with particular reference to provisions proposed by the Rules Board for the Courts of Law on civil procedure. This task team met in July this year, and the drafter is currently working on the inputs, and it's envisaged that the department will submit a revised magistrates bill to the minister within the next 2 months, and this will also enable us to engage with the Chief Justice. And a revised Magistrates Court Bill should be ready for discussion early in 2019. I'm pleased to inform the committee that the regulations dealing with the appointment of magistrates, as well as the new Judicial Code of Conduct for magistrates, after recommendation by the Magistrates Commission, was approved and gazetted on the 7th of September. Newly appointed magistrates will no longer be subjected to a probation period before they're permanently appointed, but will still be required to attend a course at SAJE before commencing with their functions. The draft regulations on leave of magistrates have also been recommended by the Magistrates Commission and published for further comment. It will further serve before the Magistrates Commission at the end of November this year, and we hope it will be able to come into effect on the 1st of April 2019. Now, basically, just to give a bit more information on that, and the leave of magistrates did come up as one of the audit problems. Currently, magistrates accumulate their leave. And when they leave office, they then can be paid out for that leave. Some magistrates have not really been taking leave and have accumulated over 1,000 days leave. So it's quite a substantial payment that they would be getting. The new regulations provide that magistrates will get the same amount of leave per year as they're currently getting. However, that they have to take a certain number of days leave a year. They can accumulate the rest of the leave over a three-year period. And if they don't use the leave in that three-year period, then they forfeit it. So it should also improve the regulation of magistrates' leave. You'll be having, I'm not going to say much on legal aid, you will be having presentations from them, but just to say that the Legal Aid Act number 39 of 2014 was fully operational, and the legal aid regulations, the policy provisions and the manual were also approved and gazetted. Sound financial management in 2017-18 resulted in the 17th consecutive unqualified audit from the Auditor General. In other words, a clean audit. The organization used 98.7% of its budget. Contemporary human resource practices resulted in being awarded, in legal aid being awarded a top employer accreditation for the 9th consecutive year and a leader in the public sector for the 3rd year, as well as being named one of the top 20 employers in South Africa. The high recruitment level of 95.1% and the low turnover of 6% was maintained. Obviously, they are being affected by the budget constraints, and they will brief you on that, but we are concerned that that may result in a reduction of coverage in both the regional and the district courts. The SIU, which also falls under the ministry, they will be giving you a report. I don't think there's too much to say on that. One point I'd forgotten to mention on the state attorney's offices is that in July, was it, I think, a proclamation was issued to the SIU to investigate allegations in the state attorney's office, in particular collusion between state attorneys and attorneys and advocates in the private sector. The OCJ also falls under the responsibility for the minister as the executive authority for the Office of the Chief Justice, which is effectively a government department. They are dealing with the administration of the High Courts, or the Superior Courts, the Constitutional Court, SCA, and High Courts. They will be making a presentation to you as well. It's pleasing that they also received an unqualified audit. Just also regarding the judges, and it's reported in the annual report that out of 250 judges in the Superior Court's establishment, 184 are black and 90 are women. We do, though, acknowledge that definitely more has to be done with regard to ensuring gender representativity amongst the judges. We are aware of the media report stating that more than two-thirds of reserved judgments in South African courts have been outstanding for longer than the three-month period, which was set by the Chief Justice. As far as I know, it was also set in the regulations that that Parliament adopted relating to the judges, but we trust that this will be dealt with by committees such as the National Efficiency Enhancement Committee and the Provincial Efficiency Enhancement Committee, which contribute to the enhanced efficiency and the performance of the courts. Those committees are run by, chaired by and run by the judiciary. I think the other point is to raise is yesterday the announcement was made regarding the appointment of members of the South African Law Reform Commission. So they now are back in office, or a new commission has been established. Judge Colopin continues as the chair of the Law Reform Commission. Honourable members, our department remains unwavering in our commitment to ensure that there's justice for those who have suffered injustice, freedom for those who are bound by shackles of poverty and inequality, and equality and human dignity for those who've suffered discrimination and prejudice. Allow me to thank you, the committee members, for your leadership and diligent commitment of your oversight responsibilities over this portfolio. Your leadership in this regard is highly appreciated. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Any addition? Deputy speaking. Okay.
Look, we are working with the UNODC and GLOAC, I think it is, on a human trafficking project. There are national task teams, there are provincial task teams. I have to say that the discrepancy between what is alleged in the media regarding trafficking cases, the numbers in the media or social media, particularly rumors, etc., versus the numbers of cases that are being investigated by the police, that there's still a huge gap. And it's one of the things I keep raising as to why. The issue with Home Affairs, which comes, I think, as you'd know, Mr. Swart, from when we were dealing with the bill relating to the position relating to victims who, from other countries, has not or still has to be resolved, unfortunately. The rest of the Act is all in effect.
I thought maybe we allow, because they still have, unfortunately it was interrupted. You remember we gave them 1 hour, then he spoke for about, it was 30. So they still have 30. So I don't know, is it narcissistic?
Well, yes, really. I think the practice of this committee during these processes is we receive the political overview, and then if there's anything we feel that the minister, or in this case the deputy minister, did not address sufficiently, we are able to ask. So I would like the minister to also address us on the findings of the unconstitutionality of the insolvency practitioner's policy and the way forward.
Okay, maybe then let's allow questions from members
on overview.
Okay, then the 30 minutes will still stand. Honourable members, questions on overview? Thank you. Any questions related to what Honourable Deputy Minister just said, besides two clarifying questions? Okay.
All right. I think the acting chief master, Ms. Besaidenhout, would be better off on that. The issue was trying to deal with transformation of the insolvency practitioners, where there are very few black people and women who are getting work. As you're correct, it was found to be unconstitutional by the Constitutional Court. My understanding is that the Master's Office is looking at an alternative policy, and I've made some suggestions, but if Ms. Besaidenhout can give more detail.
Good morning. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, committee members. Yes, it is so that the policy was declared unconstitutional. There were various issues that were lacking and not addressing in the policy. My predecessor, Mr. Vasson and Mr. Mofiano, dealt with the policy. What we've done in the interim is we've established the task team now in the office of the Chief Master, as well as various stakeholders, as Saripa, Gripsa, Saika, people, institutions which liquidators belong to. And we're going to workshop a new policy on the 9th and the 10th of November, come up with strategies, and see how it can be best suited for the whole of the country. I think which we must be quite clear on is the fact that we need to transform the insolvency industry. With the policy, it did not actually address that. The policy actually had the effect of companies using fronting or what we refer to as check collectors, that people will be would be appointed as previous PDIs, but they would do no administration and they would only collect checks. Now these are issues that we need to address if we want to transform the whole insolvency industry. What we also need to look at, which I think was lacking in the previous policy, is to get all stakeholders involved. For instance, the banks. Many of the banks have two or three companies on their preferred list, and they have actually not come to the party in terms of transformation. SASH is also one of our main headaches. They've only got two people on their panel, which they nominate to be appointed as liquidators. So these are all issues that we have to take into account, And as I said, we are going to workshop it, but closely with all stakeholders this time around, and then come up with a draft, which we will present to the Minister and the Deputy Minister, and then, of course, take it from there. Thank you.
I thought I will come on this issue at an appropriate time after we have received the whole principle, because you have allowed to meet today. I'm more worried of the retention of the status quo, because what is happening now, since there is a constitutional court position, what is happening now? I mean, how are we dealing with those identified differences in as far as our transformation agenda is concerned? But also, are there any clear timelines as to how or maybe when are we intending to realize, I mean, a fully fledged product that will enhance our transformation agenda?
Thank you. What we're doing now is the status quo before the policy is still in place. However, what we've done now is we've set up a committee that looked at a national list of liquidators. We've got a panel. You have to apply to be on the national list of liquidators. There's certain criteria which you need to meet, for instance, tax clearance, experience, and so forth. And then upon that list, when the master uses its discretionary appointment, we will then appoint. But we must not forget, in terms of the Insolvency Act, insolvency is a credit-driven process. So that means that a creditor will come by way of requisitions and ask for a certain liquidator to be appointed. In terms of the Act, at the first meeting of creditors, the master is obliged to appoint the credit-nominated liquidator. We have a discretion to appoint a second liquidator, and that is when we go to our national list and our PDI list to transform and to assist. But as I've stated, this practice is not bulletproof, because people are using this practice to front, and that is what we need to address. And for that, we need the bigger picture to get the creditors on board to assist us with transformation in this respect.
In terms of assessing the performance of the department, it will be important that in your quarterly report we get an update on the progress that you are making with this intervention.
Yes, sorry, Mr. Van Rooyen, you asked for timelines. As I said, our first workshop is in November. We are going to try our utmost before the next financial year, the end of the next financial year, that we have some draft policy in place. So that comes the new financial year, we will be able to implement if possible. But we can also report quarterly.
Right,
other issues we will be able to address when the DG and his team shall have presented. Over to you, DG. You have 30 minutes, but now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps I shouldn't say too much in the introduction, because we have 97 slides, which we will have to concertina within the 30-minute allocation we have. The presentation that the Chief Director Strategy will give will cover matters relating to policy updates, the performance overview of the department, the organizational overview, but we'll also cover the program performance, which will deal with programs 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. But please be aware that program 4 is the National Prosecuting Authority, and as we understand it, a separate presentation is being planned for that. So Ms. Mathela Sasa, who is our Head of Strategy, will give the presentation that will be projected.
Thanks, Chair. On the content, as the DG has indicated, I'll just focus on the four programs. And I've noticed that many of the issues that we are mentioning under the overview have already been dealt with by the Minister. So I won't go through each and every slide as indicated in the presentation.
Slide number three, I will skip, as those are the ones that we always have, and slide number four. And slide number five, where we're dealing with transformation of state legal services, we indicate in our report that progress has been made. I think that the DM has also indicated that, that on the operational side, the file audits have already been started to ensure that we know exactly how much work the state attorneys are doing and how they do it in order for us to get efficiencies going. And one of the key issues that we did was consultations around the issue of the transmission of state attorneys and work has continued in that regard. The aim really is to ensure that we table the business case for the transmission of state legal services during the current financial year. And on judicial governance and court administration on slide number six, we indicate there that the policy position is being prepared. It was drafted for the minister and is being dealt with through the IMC, and during the current financial year, we expect that more progress will be done on the policy.
Okay.
Slide number seven, the policy framework on the transformation of the legal system. There's a number of issues that have been identified in our legal system that needs addressing. The overhaul of all legislation, transformation of various branches of the law and measures in place to ensure that we improve access to justice. And all those are packaged under the policy framework of transformation. A draft has been prepared to address some of those issues that are mentioned in the bullet, and a draft policy has also been prepared for discussion. So progress then was made in the financial year on the policy. And on the lower cost bill, this bill is intended to bring the lower court in line with the constitution, because we are currently speaking of an old act. The progress has been made because the bill has already been shared now with stakeholders, and comments are now being evaluated. So progress, yes, has been made on the lower court. With regards to paralegal, work has continued. Research is currently being conducted following our consultations, and an appropriate funding model is being put up. So we are hoping that the financial model or financing model or funding model will be completed in the current financial year that we are in. But consultations are already taking place. With regards to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, we all know that a lot of work has happened in the last few years. Especially under basic education and higher education, funding has taken place, but we know that there are areas where we are not doing as well. On the housing side, we don't have our housing risk analysis completed yet, but a draft policy is being put up. On community rehabilitation, I'm moving on to slide number 11. On the repatriation of remains of freedom fighters, we are making progress. There were about 130 people who were hanged, and we were told that exhumations must happen as quickly as possible. So far, we brought the number to 46, and we are working with the end of 2018-19 to finalize the remaining 37. So that's the end of the organizational overview. Key areas of achievement for the department has already been mentioned by the minister. The alignment of municipal boundaries, the maps have been completed for KZN and Cape. The division of High Court has been aligned with provincial boundaries in Gauteng and West and Northwest provinces. Sexual Offences Court, I think the minister, the deputy minister, touched on that extensively. I don't need to do that. Slide number 14, on access to justice, our work on smuggling court continued. So far we have 411 that are running, and in the year that we're talking about, we ensured that advisory board members were appointed. We had 128 additional ones appointed, and we also had 98 commissioners appointed during the year. Our key area of achievement as well is on the paperless estate administration system, or PEAS.
that allow us to be paperless within the master's and environment. And by the end of the financial year, magistrate courts that were using PIS were increased from 206 in 2017 to 237. And on the Guardian Fund, we continue to do very well within that fund, and we have grown and are giving services through the Guardian Fund, and that number now of beneficiaries being serviced has grown to 800,000. On the administration side, audiovisual remand for the 8 magistrate courts were linked to 23 correctional services. The utilization of those systems has increased in the year by 44%. We're very proud of that. The court recording technology, 2,145 courtrooms were completed, and a further 47 mobile recorders were also bought. This enables recording of court proceedings, and a digital recording of them, and digital receiver and storage of such records. So we are very proud of that project as well. On the third party funds, the motor pay solution was rolled out in 8 provinces and also in 15 state attorney offices. That is a major improvement from the old system that we used to have. And on the maintenance side, it greatly improved the turnaround time of paying maintenance to our children. Legislation on slide number 16, there's a list of legislations that have been finalized in Parliament. You know about those. I'm not going to go through the list. On slide 17, those that were introduced to Parliament, the Cybercrime and Cybersecurity Bill, the Prevention and Combating of Hate Crimes and Hate Speech were introduced. And those that were implemented, the Maintenance Amendment Act, the Section 2, Section 11 and 13B, were implemented in the year under review. And some regulations pertaining to that act were also done in that year. And some of the legislation that we've been working on as a department during the 2017-18 financial year are listed on slide number 18. And as has already been said, the Child Justice Amendment Bill was introduced last week. The key challenges, those have been touched on. Budget issues are a major problem in our department. This is a high labor intensive environment, so we need a lot of people to give services, and with budget cuts, it means we tend to not have as many people as we'd like to have. But our HR post review committee did some work. We've identified posts, and we went on to fill those critical posts to ensure that services are not affected. And the majority of those are in the service points, the Master of the High Court and Court Services, and in key support areas such as ICT and finance. We continue to support where necessary. For example, the Commission of Inquiry needed our support as a department. Even with the funding challenges, we managed to give as much support as we could for the Commission of Inquiry on state statute. Continuing with the challenges, so some of the issues that we did not, or some of the initiatives that we did not implement into budget cut around the conversion of backlog courts to permanent courts, because that requires that we must have the magistrates and their support staff, and because of funding challenges, we didn't go as far as we were allowed to go. Similarly, court annex mediation, we couldn't implement as far as we could. However, there are also question marks around some implementation issues on court annex mediation, but we nonetheless didn't go as far as we were allowed to. Security remains a major issue for us. We continue to do the best that we can with the money that we have. And infrastructure, as we all know, continues to be one of our challenges. But as a department, we really continuously try to do the best we can with the limited resources we've got. I'm now going to hand over to our CFO, Ms. Rousseau, to take us through the overview of the financial report, starting the financial and audit report, starting from slide 21 and 28, before we get into program report.
Good morning, honourable members. Yesterday there was a whole discussion on the audit outcomes, so you have been briefed, so I will be brief. Suffice it to say that we are very, very unhappy with the outcomes of the audit, but we will not make excuses, so we will change that so that we will see the green faces again. But we also want to commend our staff in finally achieving a clean audit on third-party funds. We are very proud of that achievement, and it took years, but it was about improving the culture and accountability of the department in the management of third-party funds. And just for a moment to also indicate that our ICT team won the ICT Service Delivery Transformation Award for public service in relation to their work on Marjap Bay. So the work that we've done here actually assisted us a great deal to show how far we can take technology to achieve our objectives. The same cannot be said for the vote. We are still using the old systems from a previous millennium to manage funds in the vote until such time that IFMS is being rolled out, and it seems that the planned date for that to complete the rollout is only 2030. So until such a time, we will continue to work on old systems to manage our funds across the country. If you go to slide 23, the audit outcomes, the measures that we have taken to address the audit issue, we have already determined a high priority audit action plan so that we can change matters, and consequence management has been initiated by the accounting officer with specific investigations already being authorized into infrastructure and supply chain management in regions. The areas that we've identified for specific intervention, if we look at the strategic level, it's the leave management of magistrates, which you were briefed about yesterday, so we will deal with that at a strategic level, and also the procurement of legal services. We have requested exemption from the National Treasury in terms of how we procure services or outsource legal services based on the nature of the business. However, we're still waiting for the outcome, whilst we, as the Deputy Minister indicated, while we are putting in place a long-term process, such as our briefing policies, such as our tariff policies, and also potentially a framework contract. Our process interventions, those are the areas that we believe we can resolve more easily. It's resolving the integrity of our performance information on court services and state attorneys, reporting on the value of intellectual property in the development of IT systems, the finalization of the departmental structure in critical areas, and the management and recording of fraud investigations and labor relations. We believe those are critical areas, but that was raised by the Auditor General, but that we can resolve in this financial year. In terms of our headline on our spending, you are well aware of all the balls we had to keep in the air during the past financial years. And if you look at this, we actually as a department did very well, despite now the challenge on the audit. But in terms of managing our finances and staying within the budget, we really achieved a lot. You would see that our overall performance, our average annual increase was 2%, our compensation 4%, our goods and services 2% if you look from 2015-16 to 2017-18. But you will also, what we are very proud of is our accruals. We have reduced our accruals. You can see there in the 2015-16 financial year, the year end was 492 million rand, and now it was 8 million rand that was at financial year end owing. The cost drivers of the department, we specifically selected these so that you can see our cost drivers, but also so that you can see that we are trying to invest in specific areas. So you will note there, electricity and water we have no actually control over the increases there, so this is the normal increase that you would have seen in your private life as well. But you will see security services, the 14% increase, which shows that we have invested in maintaining our security services and our infrastructure. And you will also see in computer services data lines and transversal system support a 12% increase. We've also deliberately decided to invest in our IT systems and support. But you will then note our traveling and accommodation minus 9%, and you will see, I think that is about it. If you go to the next slide, you will then see our cost drivers on goods and services, the telecommunication, all those show a reduction, and these are the costs we incur in our ports on a daily basis. So you can see the cost containment measures we've implemented there. If we once again to just remind you of the budget cuts on slide 27, we moved funds towards funding the prosecutors for the Mpumalanga High Court and the Office of the Chief Justice, but our budget was also cut, as there you can see, in 2018-19 by 607 million rand. And that had a tremendous impact. You would remember that we were cut very late last year. So its impact on your planning, its impact on the projects you plan to implement because of the fact that you hear that in January and you need to implement with immediate effect. Then if you go to slide 28, I think we're back at our departmental performance.
Chair, I will touch on the areas where we did not perform well. Slide number 28 shows that on all our programs we have done fairly well, although as a department we're sitting at 74%. In the previous year we were sitting at 85%, but we've already alluded to the fact that we had budget issues relating to some of our performance. And from that slide, those issues are relating largely around program 2, but we'll get into the detail of that just now. Slide number 31, the CFO dealt with. I'm not going to deal with that. Let me go to slide number 36. That deals with court services area, and it's about the number of criminal cases on the backlog wall. Our target was to have 30,344 or less on the backlog. We ended the year with 33,000. We want to emphasize that this is not just a departmental initiative. It involves all other players within the criminal justice system. So we will continue to ensure that our integrated criminal justice system strategy takes hold, because it is through that initiative that we will be able to address the issue of case backlogs going forward. Let me skip that. Let me then go to slide 38. The number of case backlog court converted is one of those that have been mentioned. Due to budget cuts, we couldn't get to that number altogether. And all other initiatives that are linked to perception surveys were also suspended for the same reason. So the performance that deals with perception surveys have all been put on hold during the year under review. Let me then go to slide number, slide number 44 is another perception survey that was put on hold. Slide number 45 deals with the issues that we've mentioned under our highlights. We won't deal with that. The issue though of the court buildings, we did not finalize the court buildings that we plan to finalize in the year under review. The Mpumalanga High Court, I think the DM has mentioned all the issues we had, the contractual issues and delays. And also in Port Shepstone, the company that we were using went for business rescue, so that also caused delays. So that is why we underperformed under 5.2. Then the civil unintimidation on slide 47, we've mentioned it already, that there are policy considerations that we are looking into, because it looks like at the moment that the cost of mediation is still being the responsibility of the people. We thought the mediation was going to reduce costs for people, but it looks like it might not be doing that. So there are policy decisions that are being considered under court annex mediation at the moment. Slide number 48, the issue of taxations. We are meant to process taxations within 14 days, and our target was 98%. We got as far as 86%. There were some system challenges. Each and every year we enhance our systems, and some of those would have implementation issues, and this is one of those. Policy issues we've dealt with in detail on slide 49. 50, we move with speed. The next slide, which is red, is on slide 56. The letters of authority that are issued for trust, our target was 90% of those dealt within 90% should be dealt within 14 days. We go to 83%, and this is contractual issues that were linked to offsite storage of files, and that issue has since been addressed, so it's no longer an issue. On state legal services, slide 57, I'll explain them. On slide 58, the underperformance. Number of litigation cases through mediation. We had a target of really growing our mediation initiatives. We targeted 24 cases. We only then got to 4. And it's because people are not forced to mediate, but we are putting policies in place to ensure that we improve, because mediation would assist us to address case backlogs in our courts. And on slide number 59, briefs allocated to female counsel, our target was 40%, we got to 38%, which is not far off target, and we continue to work on our transformational agenda, and we are hoping that we will eventually get to 40% this financial year. Reduction of costs is a major issue for us in the state attorneys. We would like to have been decreasing costs by 5% each and every year, but we are still seeing an increase. And again, this is linked to our policies that need to be finalized, and we are working hard to ensure that those policies get to cabinet and get finalized and implemented. The issue of the legal profession has already been mentioned. The act was postponed, so all the work relating to the legal profession was not finalized on time, but we know now that we have since made major progress this financial year. And then extraditions on slide 67, we have made major improvements this year. If you recall, in other years, our target was way off. Our target this year was 91%, we got to 89%, so just a 2% difference. We are happy with the progress that we have made. And on the memoranda of understanding, this is not an easy fit on slide 68. The department was busy finalizing or discussing a number of those memoranda. We didn't get to finalize any of them, but we are making progress in other areas. For example, I must mention the extradition treaty that has now been finalized with the United Arab Emirates, which is a good thing for our country. But yes, those that we targeted, we couldn't finish. The next one that's on the, okay, we are then done, Chair. National Prosecuting Authority, they will deal with that. And I was on the
Thanks, Madam Chair. Let me just deal with those specific issues around the maintenance. Firstly, our maintenance scheme is regulated through DPW. What we do every day at the Department of Public Works, what we do every year, we pay accommodation charges to Public Works. Out of those charges, there are monies that are put aside for plant maintenance. And the plant maintenance will take into account certain issues which are not delegated to us, which are done by Public Works.
Those include the whole issue of aircons and the lifts, whilst we do the day-to-day maintenance. So at the court, when the water pipes break, when the window panes, the locking system to be replaced, justice take care of that. Those is the day-to-day maintenance. That's what you call them. But when the lifts are broken, when the electricity trips, whatever, those are functions which public works will deal with from that accommodation charges for which we have paid for. So we pay them money out of our budget from that accommodation charges. They split it. One is for maintenance, one is for municipal services, the other one with etc. For bent cords when they have to replace them, etc. But for day-to-day maintenance, we provide for ourselves as well as upgrading of infrastructure. So if we want to upgrade, include an additional room or whatever, expand the kitchen, that we pay for ourselves. So that's the model of the contract. Now what has happened is that in respect of the Limpopo High Court specifically, because the court has not been taken over as yet by public works, it is not included within the accommodation charges responsibility of the department. So they are not responsible for maintaining it. They maintain every infrastructure after the facility has been transferred to public works. It's in the asset register of public works, and there's a range of requirements which need to be met for purpose of the transfer take place, like your warranties and guarantees and the checking whatever. So now those buildings, Madam Chair, were built by justice through IDG, without not by public works as is with other buildings. So they have said to us, we will take over the ownership of the building and responsible for maintenance after they've completed the project and we have verified that it meets the requirement. So what we did, because it's in the gray area, we then obtained a special maintenance program through National Treasury to deal with the interim period. So the interim period is through a contractual arrangement, which still includes public works, but once it has been finalized, it will then be transferred over entirely to public works, so that it dealt with from the accommodation charges, like all other courts. For now, it's maintained separately, and we hope that the transfer is going to happen by end of November. We have met with public works, so by end of November, it will then be taken over by DPW, like all the other courts, etc. The day-to-day maintenance is our responsibility, and we have prepared a new standard operating procedures in terms of those maintenance. And what we are doing, just for the benefit of the members, is that we are looking into insourcing our own services, so that for those routine repairs, we don't have to all the time go and get recordations. We must have people appointed under the extended public works program with the tools bought and the repair, so that we are able to repair the routine breakages. Because what's happening now is that everything, when it's break, when there's a water leak, when there's window pane, whatever, we've always been relying on the outside service providers to come and do that. Now they can't come and do that, the work is too small for us to tender. So they can't come and install the toilet because it will cost 9,000 and they want big money. So for all those work up to 100,000, we have agreed that we are going to have our internal processes framework through which at the cluster level, in every course, we are going to have our own staff in orange uniform trained to repair, and they'll replace the bulbs, they'll replace the locking systems, whatever, and we'll appoint a team leader, a foreman, who will guide those people, etc. And that program is up and running. The DJ just approved that blueprint. We're just waiting that the minister give us the go ahead. We found money for that one, so that those small things which are problem areas, which challenge with high concern to our judges, magistrates, and prosecutors, are being dealt with speedily. And then we're just remaining with those ones for the public works, etc.
Thank you very much. The SIU, the Special Investigating Unit, is currently investigating the various complaints that have been accumulating by the various client departments as well as the Department of Justice. Currently, we have developed processes and procedures which will be put in place to ensure that there is one system of proceedings around the country in every state attorney's office, and no longer things like where there are 12 systems and 12 sets of proceedings because of the 12 or 13 offices in the country. So we are putting consistent systems in place. What we have picked up thus far, and these are short reports from the SIU, as discussions happen and as little feedback get given, that there is a tremendous amount of overreach of accounts. That means advocates charge more than what was agreed upon, much, much more than what was agreed upon. First of all, second of all, that these accounts are actually paid. Thirdly, there are cases that should have been defended that was not defended. And there are cases that should not have been defended and should have settled early, as well as capital amounts negotiated, which was not done.
Well,
Madam Acting Chair, one of the issues which we unfortunately I think are hearing the same report every time this is on the agenda is now the issue of the state legal advisors and the state attorney's office. I think the only bit of new information this morning was coming from the deputy minister to say that in the view of the task team, the solution or part of the solution might be to amalgamate or incorporate the state attorney's offices with the state legal advisor. Mm-hmm. But I think, in all fairness, what we as a committee dealing with oversight should ask for now is more detail. This problem has been a long time coming, and we know that people with big or healthy expertise in respect of organizational renewal and overhaul has been included, but I think the time has now come for us to at least be put in the loop to ease our minds that something tangible is being done to address the deficiencies there. So if that can be forthcoming, I think we would be assisted very much. In respect of the audit outcomes and so on, and I must tread very carefully now, because obviously we as a committee must always insist on the very best audit outcomes. But having said that, I find myself, after listening to the AG yesterday, feeling a bit of sympathy for the department, not only this department, but other departments as well, in the sense that I more and more get the sense that the AG, I don't want to say are shifting the goalposts, but are making findings on audit outcomes, qualified findings, and then I sort of have this question in my mind as to whether whatever they made the finding on has been clearly communicated well in advance as to this is something we will be focusing on. So I would like to hear the department's views on that as well. Obviously, in terms of clean governance, issues like the correct statement of contingent liabilities and magistrate leave, etc., is very important. But I think what should be more of a worry to us is the challenges the department are experiencing, for example, with supply chain management. And I would like the department to unpack that a bit further for us. It is well known that there is issues with the head of supply chain management, as far as I know, coming from as far back as 2016, and the latest information would be that all has not been sorted out or settled yet. And I would like the department to take us into confidence as to whether that the impact on top leadership level at their supply chain management unit has had the impact, which I think we also see in the audit outcomes. And also the likelihood that all of this will be sorted out sooner rather than later, and what steps are included in this plan. Mrs. Rousseau has referred to this drastic plan to iron all of this out going forward, because if you have a potential limitation there at the top of that unit, and it must unfortunately have a ripple effect throughout the whole unit. Then, sorry? Hopefully not. No, only two or three more, Madam Acting Chair. Yeah, then coming to the targets and the usefulness of the targets, I mean, it is on record that we as a committee has, when the APP served before us, had a bit of a tussle with the department regarding what we at that stage viewed as a sort of a weakening or a weakening our ability through the targets to play a significant oversight role. And then we were ensured that all of this was more or less insisted on by the AG, but now we are informed once again that the AG says, well, if not the targets, possibly the plan to meet the targets, or the way in which the performance information has been handled has led to an inability on the AG part to make proper findings. So I want to hear what the process is going forward now in respect of targets. Because for us as a committee, obviously, the target that has been identified as problematic, like the number of cases on the backlog rolls, etc., for us it is very important to be there. And I would like to hear what the department is going to do to satisfy both the demands of the AG and this portfolio committee in respect of oversight. And then, in terms of performance management, unfortunately, it would look through the AG's report, and then also if one ties into that the advisors from the Internal Audit Committee, that there was sufficient timely warnings that the performance management really on a top leadership by scale must be addressed. And I mean, that's the one issue I think we as a committee must ask the department to give us some clear answers as to why, when their Internal Audit Committee issued some advices that look, in terms of performance management, something needs to be done, something better than what is currently in place, because systems are more or less, if not breaking down, not properly used within the department, and how that will be addressed going forward. And then the last matter I think we should be addressed on is the old issue of the integrated criminal justice system. project, which I see the report says 22 KPIs have been sort of achieved or met. But I think that the real and only burning question is how far are we from a fully functional system? It's good to see that there's now certain, let's say, benchmarks being met or certain portions of the system bearing fruit, one which I think should be welcomed by all of us, in that apparently now the system is enabling a proper bird's eye view in respect of the court utilization, which hopefully could assist from the department to the NPA to all of these efficiency enhancement committees to look at where are we struggling in terms of our court utilization and where must be interventions to ultimately make the system work better. But the question very simply really is, how far are we from having a fully functional integrated criminal justice system? Okay. Thank you, Madam Acting Chair. No, we are the old day.
Ndiyabonibona ndimfutshane ndizawuba mfutshane ndawuntshontsha kancinci. Thank you very much. I want Ndade to say thank you for the last thing that you said. First of all, the one dealing with that now. You don't have to wait for anybody to come and fix the toilet or the window pane. I'll say I've got the example in the Kingdom Court, which I visited, where the roof is leaking now. You can imagine the damage that is being caused. The toilets and problems of the window panes and other. Thank you very much. I'm glad that the DCS has signed that to be implemented. So can you start there? Can you make sure that you start there? Because there are problems there that you will find. Secondly, I just wanted to share with you also, there are problems, as I say, I picked up the East London one, where I saw some problems, but with others, I'm sure I will keep on discussing with the department here and there. But unfortunately, this time, I just been there and I didn't have time to talk to you. But the question of human resources, I understand the budget cuts, but I can see that there was a bit of understanding in certain areas. I'm not sure if the question I don't know what the treasurer is actually saying, because you will find that there are people who are, when people resign, pass on or retire, it's not very fast. Your replacement is not very fast, and that affects your efficiency in the court. This I discovered there, where a maintenance officer was asked to go and assist in interpretation because the court had a blockade there, and in the meantime, the maintenance is not officer cannot do his job at that point. So you've got lack of personnel, so they have to ask so and so come and do this and so on. So can you check that, because at least even with the budget constraints, if it is possible, at least, because your main job is really to is the cost and other things. I also want to say thank you for having a policy that is now starting to consider the implementation of the Use of Languages Act number 12 of 2012. And you talk about access to justice. As I said, I mean, for the past 4 years now, I've been saying this, that access to justice in a foreign language, there is nothing like that. It's actually enslavement. Saying somebody to go to, you decide in your own language that I'm now guilty in according to your policies and principles of your culture, that I'm guilty, I should. Such you see. When in the Borderland, when you say, are you guilty or not? That's it. This all want to have just come to hear that. Because that's our way of doing it. But you are being asked, according to the European system, you know, the culture, you are a foreigner in your own country. Because the justice system is like that. Worse of it in a foreign language. I want to find out if you now established a unit in terms of Section 7 of this Act. Have you implemented Section 8E of this Act? And do you make the annual report to Parliament in terms of Section 10? Of the Act. And secondly, the regulations signed on the 5th of February 2014 by the Minister Paul Mashatile, and also they put in the methods of you, how as a department to do that. And I'm happy about, as I say, about the progress you're making regarding that, but it is not clear. This is why I ask this question. Because when you said that you are making that, it's not very clear what exactly are you saying that you are now considering. Related to that, I think it will take a long process to write to a department relating to whether I think this is not your problem. I think it's our problem. We decided at some stage that we're going to have a bill, community-driven bill, related to the languages in at universities and so on, and that. We could be happy if you could assist, but it will be our bit. I don't know what Nadim Fekha, how far he has gone with that, but I think that we wanted to make this thing fast, and we're able to say the universities must have teach African languages as a requirement for an LLB degree. That may also assist you in that. The other thing that I wanted to check in your transformation, not very fast, but it is transformation. What do you, have you considered introducing the principles, African principles of Ubuntu in the justice? When you go to Britain, you know the courts and everything is governed by their policies and their cultural way of understanding justice. And in France and the other as well. But in Africa, we are still under the yoke of colonialism, and our values are suppressed by the foreign values. Have you considered that? If you have not considered that, can you please do consider it? And if you, there are people who know that, and we could assist in that. But I think it is important that we have, as Mandela said, I am a foreign court, being judged by foreigners in my country, and so on. So I think that need to be taken care of if in your transformation. I again say thank you very much for the progress that you people are making. I mean, you could make here some faults here, you've got some problems here and there, but I really am impressed by that. Because I say that we need to work as a team and cooperate in here. Thanks very much.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, Honorable Acting Chair. We want to welcome the presentations from the department as led by the DM and the DG. Yeah, I think I must indicate from the onset that I think we're quite disappointed on the issue of getting a qualification again, like we did also last year. And as the CFO indicated that you have been qualified on different issues this year as compared to the previous year, of which it's another area of concern, because it might look like you, after you have been qualified last year on the issues of immovable tangible assets, perhaps you then shift your took your focus and try to look at that and ignore other things. It means you did not defend what you already had, but you decided to attack to find what you don't have. Now, in the process, then you lost what you already have instead of defending. So I think it's a serious concern to us. So I want to find out what practical steps are you going to take to prevent the department from getting a third consecutive qualified audit opinion. I'm not just talking about having an audit action plan, because sometimes we do this audit action plan, but you don't follow it. And if you don't follow it, it means next year you will also get the same audit opinion. So what are practical steps, more and above an audit action plan, just to make sure that you get out of this qualification. You see, yesterday when we were listening to the AG here, when he was presenting, when they were presenting, out of the 9 entities that they were presenting here, which 8 entities that are linked to the department, 6 of them got a clean audit, and the 2 got unqualified with matters. But the department itself got a qualification, which in my view was supposed to be the other way around. It should be the department that is getting clean audit, so that it assists, I think, this other entity. But now the department becomes a worse performer than the entities that are working with the department, you see. So I think it's not a good thing. I think we need to really work on that. And on the issue of consequence management, how does the department address the fact that the AG have identified significant issues in respect of the management at the department, specifically that the management failed to ensure proper record keeping, to prepare regular, accurate, and complete financial and performance report, and adequately review and monitor compliance with legislation? So in terms of consequence management, what are we planning to do? Lastly, Honorable Acting Chair, in respect of time, on the issue of critical vacancy post, because I think last year, I think the department indicated that there are some critical vacant posts that have been vacant since September 2016, and that they affected the financial oversight control. So we want to find out as to whether is there any movement in that regard in filling those critical vacant posts, particularly in relation to the SCM unit. Have you able to address that? If not, why not? Thanks.
No, thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation by the department. I understand the CFO is saying the department was qualified on different matters. Whilst I concur with the Honorable Skozan, but you know, to somebody else who was not part of this meeting, if you just look at table one, you will think that the department was qualified exactly on the same areas that they were qualified on in the previous year. So which means that the qualification, even if it's on different issues, but it's around almost the same area of work, which is a cause for concern. I want to touch on something which was touched on by Honorable Horn on the Integrated Justice System project. But on a different line. That the project is a multi-departmental project. Now, its success depends on various role players. Now, my question is, which body is responsible to oversight this particular project? Because if we don't have that, then the likelihood of this project never being realized are very high. And my last question is on the small claims court. Well, we appreciate the fact that we have so many small claims courts, but my worry is how are they distributed? We have a certain number of municipalities. Do we have such a court in almost every municipality? And do ordinary people know about these courts? How are they popularized? Because we have a problem of, especially in rural areas, where you have contractors who don't pay laborers. I mean, the sums that the court is responsible for. Well within the mandate of that particular court. But do our people know about this court? How can we make it a point that they know them? Are they accessible? That's my issue. Thanks very much.
Maybe ke lebogele team ya Department of Justice, and I should start by welcoming the good work that has been realized in the financial year, obviously being looked at. And if you allow me, Chair, let me be a bit biased and single out two key areas that really gave me a peace of mind. The first being the positive development that the department has reported on the progress made with their management of the third-party funds. I'm biased to this because beneficiaries of the third-party funds in the main are ordinary people, the poorest of the poor, that gave us a mandate, I mean, to come and represent them in this parliament. Of course, I'll come back to that in a form of a question in one of the funds that are under your authority. The second one being the good performance that is, and conspicuous performance that has been demonstrated by the department on the ensuring that we bring back, I mean, the remains of our freedom fighters, specifically because the families of these freedom fighters are very grateful of the effort because in a way it complements the greater effort of ensuring that we bring closure to these families. But also as one of the former freedom fighters, I would be failing, I mean, in my duty if I'm not going to acknowledge the good work that has been done by the department on this area. Now, having started with the good story, allow me, Chair, just to reiterate my concern, and I'm happy that there is concurrence also from the department. This regression on because to me, I mean, audit opinion in the main deals with issues of financial management and performance to a large extent. So regression in this area is a serious, serious concern. And I hope that the minister, of course the deputy minister is here, as well as the DG, are equally concerned. Because it can't be business as usual. I mean, this is the second consecutive year where a qualified opinion is obtained. Now, Honourable Kosan, I think I agree with you on most of the submissions that you have made. But I think the issue of the post-audit action plan should not be treated as a by-the-way exercise. It is very, very central. Because if we know the plan that the department is having to deal with all the audit findings as MPs, we are then empowered, firstly, to monitor the performance of it. As they report to us on a quarterly basis, we are placed in a better position to hold them accountable on their performance. But also as they present this plan to the team, because by now I think we should be sharing the details of that plan. Because as you present the plan to us, you accord us an opportunity as public representatives to enrich that plan. Because our duty as members of parliament entirely is to ensure that we complement your work by identifying areas where we can be of help, but also identify areas where you think your plan is lacking, so as we enrich that plan accordingly. So if we don't have that plan, it becomes difficult. I appreciate the fact that you have singled out areas where you'll be focusing on in the coming financial year. But that's not enough if those areas are not tabulated in a form of a plan. Because a plan will tell us who will be doing what, at what time should we expect results, and also where are the areas or maybe other role players that need to be engaged to make sure that that plan its objectives are realized, in fact. So without that plan, it becomes a problem. So it's a critical aspect of our work and the work of the department, this post-audit action plan. But my worry, DG and the minister, it's just the deputy minister is not here. My worry is that the audit committee is very, very worried about the pace at which we move to address some of the issues that they raise with yourselves. And to me, that's a worry. That's a worry. DG, you know very well that some of us will go to an extent of even being part of those meetings just to make sure that we address this particular concerns. So it's my worry that we are not moving the pace that is satisfactory according to the audit committee. Now, the third issue, Chair, coming back to specific areas that I wanted to raise. Well, of course, I hope we'll be finished with the post, because to me that is very, very critical, the post-audit action plan, with all those details, because it can't just be general comments on areas that you'll be dealing with. The third area that I wanted to focus on, back to third-party funds. I know for a fact, Chair, I don't know to what extent did the committee entertain the developments around the Guardian Fund. I know for a fact that these beneficiary funds, I mean, at some stage the AG raised concerns about its financial system and the management thereof by the department. Now, I'm not sure to what extent is the committee, because remember, I just arrived yesterday here. I'm not sure to what extent is the committee deliberated on those concerns. But I'm happy because the department indicated in its reports that it will be embarking on a system that they termed the modernization project. But I don't know how far are we with that particular undertaking. So if we can get an update on that, I think that will be highly, highly appreciated. And then lastly, Chair, a reference was made. I tried to look into the detailed financial, what is this, annual report, just to identify the vote with the details on how the State Capture Commission was assisted, because someone was said in passing it was assisted. But I think as a committee, as members of parliament, we might have to get the details, but also the vote from which this assistance was offered. I think those are the few things, Chair, that I wanted to raise. But generally, I think the team should keep up with a good one. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let me take where Honorable Van Rooyen has left off in terms of retaining of remains of our freedom fighters. I'm aware that you are busy doing that. That's commendable. But at the same time, much still needs to be done. There are those who, because here we are focusing on those who were hanged, apparently around here within South Africa. But DG, what about those who were assassinated in outside the country and so forth? What is the process? How far are you with that? Because families want closure as of now. We want closure. So if we can be updated on that. And again, on the issue of supply chain management, in this committee around April was informed that there were cases of corruption in procuring furniture in Limpopo High Court, Master of the High Court again, and again at the State Attorney's Office in Limpopo. And then in October again, 2016, we informed that a necessary action was taking place. But as of now, we haven't heard anything. Can we be informed of progress made so far? And in relation to your organizational structure, there are three key acting positions: that of Chief State Law Advisor, Chief Education Officer, Chief Master. And then what's the position now? And again, on the action taken of the suspended DG of Constitutional Development, Advocate Gabriela, what's the situation now? Any update on that?
May I comment, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Perhaps let me start with questions that Madam Chair you've just raised. And I will also ask my colleagues to chip in to deal with some of the matters that are specific to their areas of work. Am I speaking far from the mic?
No, no.
I'm worried about the line. Oh, the line is off. No, we just put it something. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me start with the issue of the organizational structure. Our colleague from Corporate Services will speak to this. Perhaps I should start by saying that in addition to the acting positions you pointed out, Madam Chair, we now have an acting position of DDG Corporate Services, who just left the department about 2 months ago. The processes relating to the advertising of that position is now underway. With regard to the acting chief master, I know that instructions have been given that that position also be advertised in earnest. With regard to the position of the chief litigation officer, as well as the chief state law advisor, we've been advised against filling those positions in light of the project we are busy with on the transformation of state legal services. If you are to integrate those two offices, it would be foolhardy of us to actually fill those positions when in fact the structure that is being proposed for the new entity doesn't actually accommodate those two positions in their current form. So it's best that, in fact, those positions be left vacant until a new structure is being populated, so that those positions are pegged at the right level. With regard to the misconduct concerning supply chain, in particular, the procurement of furniture through the Limpopo High Court. We did report to the committee that we had initiated processes regarding that after an investigation into allegations of impropriety was completed. There was a recommendation that disciplinary action be taken against the head of supply chain. What we then did was we set up the process and the disciplinary hearing took place. We removed the head of supply chain from the supply chain environment and we moved them to another position. I didn't like the idea of placing the person under suspension because effectively what you do is you pay them for sitting at home doing nothing. But it's best if you place them in a different position because they at least do something towards the work of the department in order to earn the income we will otherwise give them every month. Unfortunately, at the end of that disciplinary process, the presiding officer arrived at the conclusion that the employer representative in that disciplinary hearing did not leave enough evidence to prove the guilt of the person, of the employee party, on a balance of probabilities. So that being the case, we were forced then to retain the person on the establishment of the department, and we have in fact in earnest returned that person back to the position in which they were. Because once a person has been found not guilty, you have to accept the fact that that is the finding. We did explore the possibility of taking that decision on review because we were dissatisfied about that finding based on the evidence we knew we had, based on the report that we had received. It turned out later that, in fact, it was more the failure of the employer representative to lead sufficient evidence, not that the evidence wasn't there, but effectively that evidence was not placed before the presiding officer. And the presiding officer only determined the matter on the basis of the evidence placed before them. So that's basically where the situation is with that matter. There are further developments, though, in that the head of supply chain has made representations to us that he no longer wishes to actually return back to supply chain, and we have to find alternative placement for him in the department. But based on his skills profile, we have really battled to find an alternative placement for him in the department. We have since commenced the process of engaging with other departments to see whether, in fact, they would be able to accommodate him in areas where his skills may be relevant. So that process is receiving consideration from two departments, whose names I prefer not to mention at this stage. But once that matter is finalized, we will then report to the committee accordingly. But in the meantime, I've asked HR people to still look at whether, even if we don't quite have a perfect fit for that person, whether we couldn't find alternative placement for them in the department. And that is a matter that HR is now busy dealing with. Perhaps I should conclude that point by saying that when we assessed our prospects of success, because we had considered the possibility of taking that matter on review, and we found that, in fact, we would not succeed on review on the basis that there was no evidence placed before the presiding officer. It's not like the presiding officer has erred in any way in returning a verdict of not guilty. The fault was the employer representative's one, and that they didn't place all sufficient evidence before the presiding officer. Madam Chair, I'm going to ask one of my colleagues to assist me with regard to your reference to the state attorneys in relation to supply chain. I'm not sure if there's any specific case. Maybe Mr.
The case was meant to the same thing which has been alluded to, procurement of furniture.
Oh, okay.
Yes, in Limpopo.
Okay.
At Limpopo High Court, where it relates to State Attorney's Office, the Master's Office, and the High Court itself.
Now I understand. I understand. No, thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Perhaps
and also you touch on the 278 million relation to Mpumalanga High Court.
208 million relation to Mpumalanga High Court. I'm not aware of those specifics.
Okay.
Does anybody know?
On.
Yes, but before I move on, I almost omitted to deal with the question you raised regarding the DDG constitutional development. That DDG is not suspended. She was also placed elsewhere in the department while an investigation into grievances against her was being conducted. But subsequently, we've also initiated disciplinary proceedings against her. Those proceedings are underway.
Oh, she's not suspended.
No, she's not. She is in the department. Yes. But, of course, as I said, the processes are underway. We expect that once the proceedings resume, which will be in a few weeks' time, the matter would then be finalized and we would hear whether we've been able to establish our case on a balance of probabilities or not. Regarding the return of the remains of freedom fighters, Madam Chair, I wasn't too sure whether you were referring to freedom fighters who died outside the borders of the Republic, because you talked about people who were assassinated. Well, I would imagine that would include people outside the country. My understanding is that the the exhumation project that we're talking about now does not cover the might well be directly involved in this. I don't believe it forms part of the mandate of the department itself.
Maybe just let me add, strictly speaking, the exhumation project relates to people identified by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. So those, strictly speaking, are the people who there is money to exhume and to have reburied. Often when the missing persons task team of the NGA are looking for somebody, they might find somebody else as well that was buried with the another missing person who wasn't listed by the TRC. So far, I think we've been able to find ways. Sometimes it's been provincial governments that have done it, that have paid for the reburial. But it doesn't include people outside the country, and that is a big, complex issue that needs to be addressed. There's also an issue of our neighboring states that have many of the remains asking, are they not looking after the graves properly, and why do people want them to come home? It's part of their history. But that's just the short answer on that. Did you deal with small claims courts?
No.
Can I deal with it when I've got the mic there? Just on the issue of small claims courts, to the Honourable Mayile. Look, basically every magistrate's court, main court, has a small claims court. So you go in and you look for, or you ask for the clerk of the small claims court, and they will help you. We are still then, what do we call them, JB, the sub-courts or sub-district. So every district court has a small claims court. We are then rolling out to sub-district courts, but there's fewer of them. So for example, we're in the process of proclaiming Ngwelezane as a small claims court. It's a sub-court, I think, of Mpangeni, and then two in Mpumalanga, which are Nkomazi, I think, is the one. Komatipoort and Mkulu and Komatipoort and Ngwelezane are the new ones. The point you raise about do people know, that's a very valid question. Obviously, we're to some extent limited. We do things like lots of community radio engagements to explain to people. But I think it would help, the more information that's put out, the better, because they're entirely free, up to 15,000 rand. And you can, if the amount in dispute is more than 15,000 rand, you can elect, if it's 20,000 rand, you can elect to say, okay, I'll drop the 5,000 and have the 15 to keep it within the range.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Perhaps let me move on to the next area. The questions raised by Honourable Member Van Rooyen, starting from the bottom. The assistance being given to the State Capture Commission fall outside the year under review, in that commission was established in the course of the current financial year. Suffice it to say that we have given all the assistance that is required in the same way as we have given to all other commissions with regard to the establishment of the working on the terms of reference, working on the regulations for the commission together with the presidency, and providing support with regard to the establishment of the administrative support for that commission, and to assist them in other matters of an administrative nature, including those relating to procurement outside the areas that they prefer should be dealt with differently. So that is part of what we are doing for the commission at this point, and we're doing it no differently from how we have supported or other commissions, as I say, except in those instances where they have special needs which are different from those that were expressed by other commissioners before. And there are mechanisms that have been put in place in conjunction with the Treasury to assist them. They have been allocated a budget in the amount of 230 million. But that was predicated on the initial period of 180 days. Now that the Commission has approached the courts and they've been granted an extension, the cost implications would obviously increase, and the costing of that is yet to be worked on so that we can engage with the Treasury for further allocation of resources to cover work to be done over the extended period that was granted by the court. Certainly, we will continue to provide all the necessary support to the Commission. But I must mention that given the level of the Secretary of the Commission, which is at the same level of a DG, I have given delegations to the Secretary of the Commission, especially the delegations that have been on my own, recognizing the level at which this person is being remunerated, to give them the flexibility they require so that there is no hindrance to the work they need to do. So that's perhaps the level to which we have sort of demonstrated the commitment to providing support to the Commission. On the Guardians Fund, what perhaps the Honourable Member omitted to mention is that in the same way as he appreciated the third-party funds, or the Guardians Fund as well, we have a clean audit. I would need to be assisted by my colleagues from the Marshal's office or from the CFO if there are specific concerns raised by the AG with regard to the financial system. So my colleagues will step in, or perhaps I should pause for a moment and allow them to come in at this stage.
Thank you, DG. Thank you. I'll be quick, Honourable Van Rooyen. Yes, there were concerns raised as the Guardian Fund system is not a purely financial system. However, we are in an advanced state of developing that system into a financial system. We started during the beginning of this year. We will be doing the first testing during November and December. We then envisage to roll out the new financial system by January, February next year to one or two Guardian funds to see if the system works, if it meets all our requirements and addresses all issues that we feel need to be addressed, and if the system is then acceptable for the new financial year being 1920, we will roll it out to the rest of the Guardian fund. So it will be a much more financial system than it is currently, and it will take away doing a lot of work by the officials, as there are many steps that we now do to ensure that the system works quite fully and that we can achieve unqualified support.
Okay. May I
now
that I'm only 10 minutes, I'm not sure how quickly I can gallop over the rest of the questions. Perhaps I should group some of them and simply say the concern raised by Honourable Member Van Rooyen with regard to the regression in the performance management and financial management is one that we share. We are not proud.
We are not proud about the fact that we've had two consecutive qualified opinions on our part.
My apologies. So you still have to answer
Honourable Member Horn.
Okay.
Perhaps I will stop there and simply say that we agree with those concerns, and that we will then, given the opportunity in the future, present the details of our post-war detection plan to allow members the opportunity to zero in on some of those aspects to make sure that the plan is as tight as it should be. I think these are pretty much the same points that Honourable Member Skosana has raised, and we share those concerns. on Honourable Bumrana's or the IJS project, which is perhaps a very important one, my colleague Mr. Seba is here. The observation that this is an interdepartmental project is quite on point, and that perhaps before I spoil it, let me allow Mr. Leseba to zero in quickly on it and very briefly.
Thank you very much, DG, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I will start with the question that was asked by Honourable Horn, relating to how far are we in getting the IJS system functional. There's three key areas to the IJS to make it functional. The first one relates to how we manage cases across the system, and we call that the case management stream or work package. And then there's the business intelligence part, which deals with the how we instrument the performance of the criminal justice system. And I think Honorable Huan indicated that we are moving swiftly in terms of delivering the 28 key performance indicators. But there's also a critical part of it, which deals with how we're managing persons through the criminal justice system. And that is the part that has not been moving fast enough. Because it's very important how you manage the person from the entry point. What sort of, how you deal with the integrated booking of a person, how do you take their biometrics, how do you make sure that we can link everything known about that person, and how do you actually make sure that you collect as much information as possible at the point of entry so that that information can be useful later on in the system, especially when there is movement of people from one detention facility to the other throughout the system. The part that has not been moving fast is that one, but there's critical interventions that have happened which have stimulated some sort of optimism in that regard. Working together with the cluster partners and National Treasury, we have managed to get the consolidation of the IJS budget. You would recall that at some point there was the IJS budget was allocated to two votes, which is Department of Justice, which takes care of all other partners, and the SEPs part. So that created a bit of a problem in terms of the accountability framework, which weakened the power of the collective as far as the delivery of the project is concerned. So that problem is now out of the way. All the budget of the IJS budget will be consolidated and allocated to the Department of Justice vote, which is a great thing. But there's also a major intervention that has also happened to deal with the work that must happen within SEPs, which has not been moving fast enough. The National Commissioner of the Police have appointed a Deputy National Commissioner for Crime Detection to chair the steering committee that looks after the what we call the Integrated Person Management program, which of course deals with the integrated booking process. Another piece has to do with the detention management part of it. So I'm very optimistic that in the next 12 to 18 months, we would have made significant progress to getting that work done. It's massive work because it means it changes how the entire process of how persons are being dealt with when they are arrested at various police stations throughout the country. So it's a major step change, but it's something that we will have to move very fast to get it done in the next 12 to 18 months. What is also helpful is the work that is happening within the Department of Home Affairs space. There's a system called the, is a project called Automated Biometric Identification System, ABIS. Many of us would relate to the terminology that we normally use to say is the harness upgrade. So it's basically putting a new system in place to replace the legacy harness system. So which means it broadens what the biometrics that are already there in the Department of Home Affairs space, over and above the fingerprints of and the photographs of residents. That system will also be enhanced to include your visitors, your asylum seekers, and the broader pool of people that are interacting, that are getting in and out of the country, over and above. So that will give the law enforcement agencies a much broader pool of searching at the point of arrest, whether this person is known for other things, is wanted for another crime, and so forth and so forth. So that we start dealing with addressing the issue of people that are not supposed to be out on bail, don't find themselves back into the streets. Because once we can determine a lot of information we know instantly within the 48-hour window, then we will empower the prosecution to oppose bail for people who are not deserving bail. I'll leave it there. Chair, let me just address the issue of which body is overlooking the delivery of this project. There's a structure, an interdepartmental structure, which is called the IJS board, which consists of the CIOs or the chief information officers of all the departments that are involved, paired with the senior business representatives or people from operations who would be able to ensure that the technology solutions that we're putting in place are addressing the legitimate operational issues. So that structure is the one that overlooks, that oversees the implementation of various projects. We do an integrated plan, and that's the one that forms the submission to Treasury to say this is what we're going to do for the financial year. We have also started the process with the Director General to review the governance around IJS. How do we bring the Directors General of the various departments closer to the program, number one, and how do we replicate the IJS board at two higher levels, at the DG's level as well as the ministerial level. So that, at the moment, is still a proposal. Which I believe the DG and the minister would consult their colleagues on to make sure that it can be approved at some point and implemented. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll just be dealing with some of the comments on the finances. I think it's important, I won't go into detail, but just to indicate some of the challenges we have. In relation to the underspending, sir, I would just like to indicate that our challenge is that given the circumstances that we experience in the country, we have changed from a principal risk-based approach in terms of the PFMA to a rules-based system, whereby we experience that every year the rules are changed on us. For instance, last year during the adjustment budget, suddenly a decision was taken that you could not move funding away from compensation, but the previous year you could move funding away from compensation but not to compensation. So when you change the rules and you earmark funds and you ring-fence funds, you actually take away the ability of the accounting officer to manage his risk. And that is why we had that underspending. We were managing in terms of a previous rule, and they changed it on us mid-year, and we couldn't change it because it was part of an act by Parliament. That's our one challenge. I'm going towards the issue on the qualification. I would say the cause of this is basically the fact that we also change our modified cash standards without due consultation and thorough interrogation between National Treasury, the Auditor General, and the Department. So when we read some of these standards, we have an interpretation. The Auditor General, when he comes, he has an interpretation, and when you speak to the Accountant General, they have a different interpretation. And therefore, last year, we had to be qualified based on the standards, but it was an unfair qualification because subsequently they understood the challenges and they gave a permanent deviation from that standard. Because if you remember well, that was on capital work in progress that they wanted departments to account, which was for the sole purpose of managing the budget and seeing where budget goes, but not understanding that it leads to duplication in accounting because the entity is an entity that accounts on a accrual basis. So they already accrued and account for that. Then departments had to account, plus the challenge came with the auditing. Once we must account for it, we need to provide documentation. We as DPW has a deviation. They don't need to give us any supporting documentation. So that led to the whole qualification of the previous year. So I just want to put it again on record that it was correct that we were qualified, but in my view it was an unfair qualification. Then dealing with new challenges in this year, maybe also to say that the goalposts do shift. The Auditor General changed their audit approach, as you are well aware, the previous financial year. And they started to use data analytics. And as I indicated, we are basically still in the old millennium on our own system. Therefore, they have an advantage on us. And what also happened is that every time new legislation is implemented, the Auditor General audit in accordance with that, but we don't have the systems to support that. A good example would be employees doing business with the government. Last year, they did the data analytics. The Auditor General has access to all departments. They can raise issues we didn't know. We had to put that as potentially irregular expenditure. We investigated according to us. All our documents were correct, so this year we removed it. But the point is that they audited at such a late stage that we did not have time to investigate. So that is basically our challenge at the timing. But the Auditor General has been very professional and very kind to us in their objective way. I don't know, I'm saying kind because they do understand. In dealing with these changes, I think how we will resolve this is by dealing with this now proactively. I've requested the Auditor General not to come and start auditing new items in July because that's what they do, and then we end up where we are now instead of doing it during the interim. So we discussed this with the Auditor General, and we will also be implementing our own data analytics so that we also in advance can see what they are seeing, so that it solves our problem. I think the other challenge may be just speaking to deviations, because in supply chain everybody was concerned about deviations. The rules also changed there. In the past, if you wanted to deviate in a contract, you could deviate, but you just had to inform National Treasury. Now you need permission from National Treasury. And then when you understand your processes that you go through, our experience is that you then say, well, we need at least 4 months. But National Treasury seems to always half it as if it's a negotiation and not a fact-based process. So if you request a deviation for 4 months, they will give you one for 2 months. So after another month, 2 months, you must go back and say, but here we have proved the process. The process is correct. We're not trying to take shortcuts. So that has been a concern to us. Maybe just indicating some of the delays, why there was a delay. We've implemented to improve our quality, our supply chain processes. We've implemented the quality assurance process for all our bids above 50 million rand, where we asked the National Treasury to quality assure our bid process. That is the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. That is, in the end, I think when they agreed to assist us, I think they were not aware of the number of bids that we deal with. So in the end, they've now requested 2 months to do a quality assurance, which then impacted on us in that regard, which the Auditor General then regards as poor planning, because they are saying, why do you implement something if you don't anticipate the results? But for us it was important, so because of the fact that we are in the news for challenge experience, so that we do the objective and independent quality assurance. The other issue may be just also on quality or why we sometimes have problems. We have experienced about a year ago, we started to, we got an irregular expenditure. We, in our processes, we missed where the bidders actually committed fraud, because obviously my people are not trained fraud consultants and specialists. And then we started to deal with anticipating fraud when people bid, or businesses bid, suppliers. And we have had, in the last 3 years, we've had 3 large bids where we had to deviate because we found all the qualifying bidders non-compliant, or that they committed fraud on such things as BEE certificates. It's a few matters where we've picked up and where we've improved our processes. And I think, therefore, that is mainly in supply chain why we had a lot of deviations. Then the last thing maybe just to say, what are we doing not to have the challenges next year again? In terms of disclosure, we are working closely with the Office of Accountant General now, because we now know that we need to engage with them and understand what they interpreted. And we immediately speak now to the Auditor General so that we get concurrence on how they will audit, and that will basically resolve that. I hope that answers. I hope that
Honourable members, is there any follow-up?
Yes, okay. I don't remember my question.
Oh, that's of Honourable Bumlwana. Then you are noted.
let me do that quickly. There were 2 questions from Honourable Bumlwana, Madam Chair. The first one was whether we have established the language unit as required by the Use of Official Languages Act, and whether we've been submitting the report as required, annual report as required in terms of that act. Chair, I must indicate that we're in the process of setting up. One of the first memo which the new acting DDG for Corporate Services, Mr. Mpule, to sign was the approval of the establishment of that unit. The advert is up and running, and we have the selection process intended to be finalized for the end of this month. We have been liaising with the Department of Arts and Culture in terms of our challenges in the non-compliance. We have not yet submitted the report, but we did indicate that we will submit our report in terms of this year. What we have been doing in terms of the policy, which is the matter which honourable ministers have been helping us, we have put in process a costing mechanism just to ensure that we are going to channel funds to the implementation of that policy. I've said to the CFO, rather than wait us to go to Treasury and wait for new money to implement, let's start with the incremental implementation so that there are benefits which are starting to yield in the process. We need to set up a huge translation unit. We need to change the J15 into the languages of those provinces, into Ndebele, Zulu, whatever, etc. And we can start in a process. We can even target in provinces where we know that the rural communities, whatever, the challenges are very huge, so that we have an implementing time frame. Let's say within 3 years, would have done it, and I think that process will help us to start the implementation rather than to wait for money. Let's use what we have to start bits and pieces, than to wait for money to do a bank approach, etc. We have also looked into the issue of the foreign languages interpretation capacity. We've also looked into the issue of creating standard operation procedure for all the languages, and we're writing a manual through the qualified instruction, and we hope that policy will basically allow us to start putting capacity where we need it and shifting capacity where it's not required in terms of information services. But we'll engage with, we'll provide regular reports to the honourable member just to see how we progress, also to get guidance in the implementation as it introduces new way of doing things. So we'll take a note on the need on the desire to have a bill that should deal with the implementation of the multilingual policy of government and the use of the university's faculties, which have been a matter which have been discussing, and we'll continue to get guidance from the committee how to explore the process. The second point which the honourable member raised, whether we've started to inculcate the whole value of Ubuntu into our legal system and how the courts operate. And I think it's one of the projects Minister is passionate about. It constitutes part of the Renaissance project. We've started thinking about it. We've started doing work with it. The Minister targeted that we start first with the criminal justice system, because our criminal justice system is still based largely on the pre-94 dispensation, the Roman Dutch regime that we've inherited. And obviously, part of cracking that system is to build in the new value system. And we will have an opportunity to come and share with the portfolio committee what are the aspects that we've identified in that system for immediate reform. And some of them are basically basic things that restores human dignity in terms of how people are treated in court. Our courts are still operating in terms of the old dispensation, old system, which if we're going to outline and start explaining here, it will take some time. But we'll have an opportunity where the minister will come and present what we are doing in terms of under the ICJS program to transform the criminal justice system to bring it in line with our constitutional value system. And that's our starting point in moving forward. But I just want to assure that there's already some thoughts around that work which the ministers are guiding us on. Thank you. All right. Let me start by appreciating the responses. I think three or four, you seem to be dealing with a moving target. That's my personal take. Every year, new thing. So it's clear that the issue of the quality of the audit opinion might take us some time, I mean, to realize the desired outcome. That's my take. That's my personal take. Now, I'm wondering, in your own take, as the financial guru in the department, the status of competency on financial management of the whole department, is it something that you are happy with? Because I can tell you now, most of the government department, they look at this thing as something that should be outsourced. But it's a scarecrow, some of the government department. So I'm not sure, I mean, in your own take, do you think the Department of Justice have the required capacity to deal with the financial management aspect of their mandate? Because from where I'm sitting, I think you have been identifying new things coming in, but the rest of the matter, if you look into your report, some of the findings by the AG are restated findings. They're not necessarily new. They're not necessarily new. So I'm a bit worried of your approach to realizing the desired outcome. And then, you see, the response of the Guardian Fund, I think is flying over the whole issue. It's not giving us details. It's not giving us details. So, Chair, I don't know if in our tight schedule, can we allow the department to come and present exactly what is it that they are referring to when they speak of this new financial model? What is it that you are referring to when you refer to the system modernization approach that you are taking on the Guardian Fund? I think that will help before even you decide to appoint service providers. That will help for us to understand exactly the approach that you want to take on this particular aspect. I think those are the issue of the vote, DG. The issue of the vote, DG, I think I'm happy that it's being approached as it was approached in other commissions. I just wanted to know the vote number, because from where I'm sitting as a public representative, I'll have to follow the details of that vote without any fear or maybe any favor. So it will be important that we get the info on those, the vote that is used to usually take care of such assignments, because then we know, as an overseeing committee, then we know that this is what is happening and we can account for it. You know? So if you can just get the vote that you have been using for the previous commission, that's fine. Well, then your response is clear that in the next annual report, we might get the details of what is happening currently. But as you say, there is a trend that you are following. So can we just get them? Because I tried to look here, but maybe it's because one was going to in a rush. But if you can just refer us, this is the vote that we use usually to take care of such activities. You know?
Yes, I really thought that you would touch on your progress. You remember you said you are piloting the question of languages in court. I maybe have forgotten to touch on that. Then you can please elaborate on that. While you have explained that, as you know, that this is the thing that is very frustrating.
Okay.
Yes, Chair, as we all know, we do have a pilot. We have undertaken a pilot in all the provinces. We have consulted with the stakeholders. The inputs which came from the NTA, from the judiciary, in terms of the issue of identified issues of the language terminology that we developed and agreed upon, etc. And that will talk into how we're going to use the universities in terms of coming with uniform language across the provinces. So those are the aspects we said we wanted to engage with the portfolio committee to get some further guidance. Mm-hmm. And they could also assist to be drawn into the bill that the committee, the members of the portfolio agreed to over this time, that they could assist to get it underway, etc. But we are looking at how we can expand beyond the reports. The recommendations of the first panel that we've undertaken this matter.
Madam Chair, may I just?
You only have now 1 minute. The IT.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say to Honourable Member Brian that. Our vote number is 21, and perhaps he may not be able to find joy yet under that vote, because this money was given after the appropriation. But in 2 weeks' time, when the Minister of Finance gives his medium-term budget policy statement, in the adjustment estimate, that's when that will become apparent. Yes.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Honourable Members. Since the post-review committee ceased its operations, we were then given the task to increase and reduce the vacancy rate. We've already advertised 224 posts, and we, even as for supply chain management, we have renewed contracts because we had a big challenge in terms of our capacity, and the contract ranges from 12 months to 6 months, and most of the regions and the branches have given us their recruitment plans, and I think if all systems go, maybe
of note is the regional heads, the three regional heads that we've already appointed, and our turnaround ranges around 1 to 2 months. So I think the honourable members will be content to know that we are going to back to full speed to where we were before we had the challenge of capacity in terms of money. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Francis GM and DG, and then we'll meet with MPA this afternoon, and you are one of the speakers. And then tell me that so, honourable members, honourable members, we have an urgent matter before us here. We are supposed to have dealt with this rule pertaining to the legal practice council, and then unfortunately we are not dealing with those that in this 1994, the ones which were given to us and went to the National Assembly for approval of adoption. Unfortunately, this one was not brought to our attention. So, and then, no, thank you, members. Okay, honorable members. Oh, we are still in session. The court is still in session. So, honorable members, that's the report before you. In terms of this report, speaks to the issue of the composition of the Legal Practice Council. You might be aware that elections have been held, attorneys have elected their people, their representatives, the advocates have also elected their representatives. What is left now is for the academics, the SALTA, South African Lawyers Teachers Association, to elect their person or people, and also for the deans of law also to elect their people. So these rules are giving effect to the remaining component of the Legal Practice Bill, Act, which are the academics. So, can I rectify something? The regulations were referred to the committee for consideration and report, not on the 19th, but 21st. Please rectify, of August, not July. And the same committee were briefed on the 21st of August, not 19th. So it's the 21st August, not July, and the 21st August, not 19th. There you are, Akbar. There you are, honorable members. A mover for adoption. Akbar led Maina.
Chair, I move for the adoption of the report.
Noted.
With
the amendment that the Fandoyan? Oh, sorry. Okay. Kosana? Oh, on record?
seconded, Honourable.
Okay, thank you, thank you. Of course, this in favour must be done in terms of record. Those in favour? Okay. All unanimously. Thank you very much. Honourable members, thank you so much.
We apologizing in advance. I have a member meeting now at 1:30, 12:30, 1:30. So is it possible for us to come and meet with MPA at 1:45, if you are indulgent? MPA.
But they are of the view they're coming back at 2:00.
No, I'm saying yes. You can come back at 1:45 for 2:00.
Oh.
Yes, no problem. The program is saying 2:00. We can come back at 5:00 or so. If you are saying 2:00, I don't have any problem. That's why I'm apologizing in advance.
Why do you want this product?
No, I've been corrected. At 2:00. But 2:00 we are starting. Actually, I'm saying 1:45 to allow you to walk and see.
But don't you mean?
Mr. Horn just want to say to the acting chair, if you again tell me to be short and then you allow the ANC members to be longer than ours, there's going to be problems.
No,
yeah.
I know you are threatening me. I'm going to report
you. No, you must be impartial.
Okay, members, let us be short. Okay. Honorable members.
This is the PMG.
Do you have? I'm fine, thank you.
Sharp night, oh.
Do you? Sorry.
My girlfriend.
I am different. Do you have?